So thank you very much for being over here. My name is Bhayani Das, disciple of His Holiness Prabhupada Swami. And I'm here from the Washington, D.C. Area. So it's a wonderful opportunity for... I was just thinking when I was listening to the wonderful classes, that it's such a rare and wonderful opportunity for Vaishnavas to come together in a holy dham and be able to do Krishna Katha. There is a special potency when you are in the presence of deities, when there are devotees around, when there is the mercy of Guru Parampara flowing. So it opens our heart, and we may hear the same instruction or may hear similar things many times, but the special potency of the of this environment, it makes us more receptive. I had once attended this the Dale Carnegie communication course, and they said that when a person hears, any guesses how much of it he retains typically? So how much?
10%,
1%. So we have very seasoned people, it's 7%. So actually when I was asked the question, I was saying 60%, 70%, but actually it's very less. But somehow, you know, when our heart's open, then our ears also open. And what we hear makes a change in our life. So I wanted to thank the devotees who have worked so hard in making this happen. A lot of them are running around. A lot of them have been working for weeks, if not months, before it. So please join me in giving them a hand of round of applause. So I'm going to be speaking a little bit about the topic of forgiveness. And wanted to just start off by doing the Mangala Charan. Jai Shri Shri Radha Damodar Ki Jai. Om Ajnana Vimrandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Vadati Svapadantikam Vande Aham Shri Guru Shri Yudhapada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavansha Sīrūpaṁ sākṛjātaṁ sāgunaragunātaṁ vitaṁ tāṁ sajīvaṁ sādvaitaṁ sāvadūtaṁ parijana sahitaṁ krishna chaitanya devaṁ Shri Rādhā krishna pādhāṁ sāgina lalitā Shri viśākhāvitāṁśca Hare Krishna karuna sindhu dīna bandhu jagatapati Bhūpesha gopikā kāntā rādhā kāntā namastate Tattva Kanchana Gauranga Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishnu Sukhi Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vajrakalpataru Vayasya Kripala Sindhu Devacha Adhitam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vatsala Gauravattu Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So why don't we start off asking some questions, and maybe that will help me speak in a more relevant way. So what do you think is something that we are all looking for in our lives? Or what is the one most important thing that we are all looking for in our lives?
Happiness.
Happiness, pleasure, love. Say that again.
Peace.
Right. So yes, all right, answer that. Essentially, we are all looking for happiness in our lives, in one form or the other, through peace or through purity, but we're looking for happiness. Really speaking, there's very few of us who get up in the morning and say, today I really need to be unhappy. You know, I mean, if you do, then we need to see a doctor. But most of us, we get up in the morning and we say, you know, let this be a happy day for me. Second question, where is it that we derive the most happiness from? In relationships? To see others happy? Yes. Not hurting others and not hurting yourself. Thank you. Yes, please. Serving others. Yes. Can you speak a little louder? By being present in everything. Okay. So, well, one common denomination was that it is always with respect to others, serving others, in relationships, making others happy. And really speaking, that is a real source of happiness, is relationships. That when relationships are good, then happiness flows. And when they are not good, then unhappiness flows. If you go back and, so I'm sure all of us in our house, well now it's changed a little bit, but maybe 5 years ago, you know, we all had in our house the stacks of albums. Sweet memories, happy memories. And if you flip through the albums, what you going to see? You'll see pictures of yourself, with your parents, with your friends. I don't think there's anybody who has an album saying happy memories, and he has only pictures of himself. Me as a child, me going to school, me getting a job, this is, you know, me getting my degree. You know, really speaking, that's why we cherish them. Because this is the happiness that you're experiencing in relationships. And conversely, if you think of some of the saddest moments, it is in the same context also. So relationships are like, they're very potent. They're like a dual-edged sword. They're just like they can give us happiness. Over time, they can also give us unhappiness. When the relationships start souring, then there is anger, there is resentment, there is mistrust. One of the things, especially in a devotee setting, the single most detrimental thing to determination to a relationship is when we cast aspersions on the sincerity of the other devotee. That's why Vaishnava Prad is the number one, because it is actually when we, so devotees. If you notice, by nature they're very forgiving. You go to a devotee and say, this khichdi you made was really bad. And they'll say, okay, Prabhu, I'll try better. Or if, you know, they say, you know, that the kirtan that you sang, you were really off tune. So these are all personal examples I'm talking about. So then I'll say, okay, you know, let's see what I can do to do it. But if you say something that reflects on the sincere, because there is only one thing that a devotee can offer. The very existence of a devotee is a sincerity to Krishna consciousness. Everything else is just a manifestation of it. So when you say something that impinges on that sincerity, you're actually denying the very existence of the person's devotional beliefs. So that is why it is that one thing that we have to be very, very careful about. So what do we do when we are in a relationship that is becoming confrontational, that is not going the way that it is? What do we do in that situation, typically?
Yes.
communication. Yes, Mataji?
Search
in our own heart.
Back off.
So we have one honest person. So, little story I'll tell you in this context. It is of questionable authenticity, the story, but the message is interesting. So this is during the time of Satyug. There are two people, Bhai Das and Abhai Das. So Bhai means fear and Abhai means fearless. So two devotees, they go out walking in the jungle, and after some time Bhai Das says, see down over there, there's a saber-toothed tiger coming. So they both look at it. So Bhai Das takes one look at the tiger and runs away. Abhai Das looks at the tiger and says, he starts thinking, philosophizing. Why is this tiger so inimical towards us? What kind of a species is this tiger? And what happens? The tiger eats him. And what happens to Bhai Das? Bhai Das goes and marries. And he has children. And the same pattern is repeated again and again. So we are in a way survivors of that instinct, that when there is a confrontation, we have an option of either fight or flight. And we have evolved from Bhai Das. We are experts at flight. So we withdraw ourselves from the situation. You know, we see this tiger of disagreement. So many times we have seen that in our lives, that there is a relationship that was flourishing. And then we start seeing challenges in the relationship. And then what we do? We withdraw. We take a look at the saber-toothed tiger and we say, and we are off there. But what that does is that it leaves us with a lot of unresolved feelings. That what was the situation? What was the reason behind the adversity? So these are all unresolved issues that stay in our mind. And what that does is that makes the relationship, it'll either make it dysfunctional, which means that the communication happens in parallel channels, or it breaks the relationship. If you have the option, you say, I have nothing to do with this person, that person will probably say the same thing, and then you're basically disconnected. The net of this is that the same relationship that had an opportunity to give us so much of happiness, to give us so much of joy, is now either gone, or worse, it is giving us disharmony. And the key to fixing it is through the process of forgiveness. That what forgiveness allows us to do is to look into a relationship and extract the essence out of it. And it also, what it does is, like when a person is bitten by a snake, what the snake doctor comes is that through mantras and chants, they're able to extract the venom from the person and he becomes healthy again. So the process of forgiveness, it allows us to extract the venom from the relationship so that it becomes healthy again. So forgiveness is a quality that is glorified over and over again in all scriptures. In Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. So I just wanted to read a little bit of a purport by Srila Prabhupada on this. So this is from the first canto, chapter 18. It's a purport on verse 48. So I won't read the Sanskrit, I'll read the translation and I'll read the part of the purport. So a little bit of backstory on this is that this is when Parikshit Maharaj is cursed by Sringi, the son of Shaumik, because he had put in a dead serpent on his neck, and Sringi, becoming very angry, without even trying to find out more of the antecedents, He curses Parikshit Maharaj to die in 7 days. So Prabhupada writes that the translation is that the devotees of the Lord are so forbearing that even though they are defamed, cheated, cursed, disturbed, neglected, or even killed, they are never inclined to revenge. In the purport, Prabhupada says that Rishi Shamik also knew that the Lord does not forgive a person who has committed an offense at the feet of a devotee. The Lord can only give direction to take shelter of the devotee. He thought within himself that Maharaj Parikshit could come to curse the boy. He might be saved. So Maharaj Parikshit had the potency that he could have taken the curse away from him, or he could have counter-cursed. There are various examples in the scriptures where when a person thought he was wrongfully cursed, then he counter-curses. But Maharaj Parikshit does not do that. But he knew that a pure devotee is callous about worldly advantages or reverses. As such, the devotee are never inclined to counteract personal defamation, curses, negligence, etc. As far as such things are concerned, in personal affairs, the devotees do not care about it. But in case of their being performed against the Lord and his devotee, then the devotees take very strong action. So Prabhupada is making a distinction. When to forgive, when not to forgive. So he glorifies the quality of forgiveness when it is applied personally to the devotee. But when the same offense is being done against another devotee or against Krishna, then the devotee is very vigorous in protecting it. So we see that this quality of forgiveness is something in the 10th chapter. Krishna says, when he's talking about his opulences, he says forgiveness is one of my opulence. Then later on in the 17th chapter, when he's talking about the mode of goodness, he says kshama, or forgiveness is the quality of Brahmins. It is their essential quality. The essence of the Bhagavad Gita. So which verse summarizes the Bhagavad, gives the essence of the Bhagavad, the final summary of the Bhagavad Gita? Close. Savadharam Pratyaya. So what is the essence of Savadharam Pratyaya? Aham tum sarpapebhyo mukshyami masuja. So what is Krishna saying? I'll forgive you for all the offenses that you have done. So Krishna is presenting that as, and of course Krishna is all forgiving. But in order to inspire us, he is presenting this quality. That Sarabdharam Paritaje, you know, when you surrender all varieties of religion and surrender to me, I will free you from all your past sinful activities. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is called Mahavadanya because he is ready to forgive irrespective of anything. Mahaprabhu's essential quality is that he has already forgiven us for the sins that we have and we will commit. And that is why Mahaprabhu is actually considered even more merciful than Krishna. So we see many of these in the scriptures also. That there is a famous pastime between Ambarish Maharaj and Durvasa Rishi. That Durvasa Rishi came and insulted Ambarish Maharaj to the point that he was trying to kill him. That's a pretty severe insult. And Ambarish Maharaj was completely calm. He was constantly forgiving Durvasa Rishi. When he came and chastised him, when he came and berated him, he was constantly forgiving him. And what was the result of that? That even without trying separately, Ambarish Maharaj, he got the complete protection of Krishna. Just in terms of yogic powers, Durvasa Rishi was much more powerful than Ambarish Maharaj. But because of this quality of forgiveness that he displayed, he attracted the mercy of Krishna. We similarly see in the pastime of Prahlad Maharaj and Hiranyakashipu, that after Hiranyakashipu had tried so hard to kill Prahlad Maharaj, what does Prahlad Maharaj ask from Narasingadev? He says, forgive my father. And what does he get? He gets to sit right next to to Narsingadev. In fact, Lord Narsingadev actually licks Prahlad Maharaj. So how much more fortunate can a person be that he gets such close association of the Lord, and that quality that he was personifying was so much of forgiveness. That just after, think about it, there's a person who happens to be a father who has been very actively trying to kill you. And when the Lord comes and asks you, what is it that you want? The first thing that you say is, forgive this person. So it's a very remarkable quality in devotees. Now, Srila Prabhupada at one point said that he was talking in the context of Haridas Thakur. As we know, Haridas Thakur, when he was asked to give up his Krishna consciousness, he refused. So the Nawab had him beaten in 22 marketplaces, and all the time while he was being beaten, Haridas Thakur was praying that, please forgive these guards who are beating me. And later on, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reveals to him that actually I was taking all the blows that were falling on your body. So that is how attractive the quality of forgiveness is to Krishna. Prabhupada mentions that Lord Jesus, he forgave the people who were crucifying him. And he says, from that we can understand that he is the Son of God. So this is the greatness of this quality of forgiveness. We also, in contemporary times, we see one of the examples that comes to our mind is Nelson Mandela, that he was wrongfully imprisoned for 28 years. And when he came out, the first thing that he did, he said that, I completely and unconditionally forgive my captors. And because of that, he became one of the most loved and respected persons. He still is. Because of this quality of forgiveness. In contemporary times, we can, each one of us has also experienced that quality of forgiveness. Srila Prabhupada, he was so forgiving in terms of his relationship to his disciples, in terms of how he dealt with people. There is that pastime that when he was trying to establish the Jubal temple, then the person who sold him the land was actually a bit of a cheat. So he had sold him the land, but in a way that he got the money, but he would not get the land. And it was becoming very litigative, contentious. And then it so happened that while he was doing all this, this person died. He had a heart attack. And his wife came and spoke to Prabhupada. And the first thing Prabhupada said to his wife is that, you don't have to worry about anything. That I am there, I am like your father, I'll take care of anything that you need. So not for a moment did he hold any grudge or resentment. And then of course the rest is history, that the land was transferred and the famous Jubal temple was built. So on the flip side, when you see this quality being absent, we see that there is so much of strife and dissent that goes on. Prabhupada actually says that because Sringi was unable to forgive Parikshit Maharaj, it gave Kali Yuga the opportunity to enter. Because the Brahmins are the head of the society, and the quality of the Brahmins is forgiveness. So when that quality was missing, it gave Kali Yuga the Kali actually started from that point. That it entered in its complete form. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is this pastime of Advaita Acharya. So Advaita Acharya had this strong desire of wanting to be chastised by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So because he was much older, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would always deal with him with a lot of respect. So he missed the rasa of being chastised. So what he started doing was that he had disciples. So he started speaking Mayavadi philosophy to them. He started saying, you are all God, I am God, so that kind of thing he was saying. And of course, when Mahaprabhu heard about it, he got very upset. So he came and he chastised Advaita Acharya very severely. And Advaita Acharya was satisfied after that. So what happened was, as a result of it, two of his sons, they became very upset at their father. And in the conversation, they said that sometimes you say this, sometimes you say that. we don't understand what you're saying. And Advaita Acharya was trying to explain to them. And they said, we don't understand what you're saying. So they refused to forgive him. Even though it seemed to be a transgression, but for a higher purpose. And as a result of that, they became, in the real sense, they became Mayavadis. They became impersonalists. And so look at, they had the opportunity, they were born of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. And then there's the opportunity for Shuddha Bhakti. But because they were unable to forgive their father, they lost that opportunity. Similarly, in the Mahabharata, we see that so many of these incidents happened, like Draupadi laughing on Duryodhan. Duryodhan, he stepped on water thinking it was ground, and so he fell into the water. And Draupadi started laughing. And Duryodhan got so upset at it that he just refused to forgive her. He would say that the sight of that woman laughing at me haunts me day in and day out. It was one of the factors that led to Mahabharata and Duryodhan being killed. Similarly, between Amba and Bhishma, Bhishma, he won Amba in a swayamvar for his younger brother Vichitravir. And then something happened, and then finally Amba said that, Bhishma, you have to marry me. And Bhishma said, I cannot, because I have taken the vow of celibacy. And Amba just did not, she refused to forgive him. And she was so determined in her not forgiving him, that if you look at her life, very, very painful life. The kind of things, austerities that she did, she got cursed over and over again, she died, she took birth as Shikhandi, and then, finally, again, even though she was instrumental in the killing of Bhishma Dev, Shikhandi himself died a very unglorious death, all because of his inability to forgive. So we know, and these are all examples that kind of restate the obvious. In our hearts, we all know that forgiveness is a desirable quality, and unforgiveness is an undesirable qualities. But why is it that we are not able to forgive? Any thoughts or comments on it? In our mind, we know that forgiveness is noble, unforgiveness is bad. We feel hurt. We feel hurt, we cannot forgive. Prabhu?
Probably because of the life.
Okay, say that again, Prabhu.
Strong bodily conception of life and lack of Krishna consciousness.
Strong bodily conception of life and lack of Krishna consciousness. Thank you.
False ego.
False ego.
Strong
fruitive mentality. Right. Pride. Pride is a very strong factor. Yes, Madhu.
Trauma.
Personal trauma. Yes.
It's
a nature not to forgive. So it's the nature of the conditioned soul not to forgive. So envy is there. Yeah. So all these factors are there that somehow at the root of it, it's our mind. It's our mind is the biggest impediment. You know, the mind tells us so many things, and most of the things are nonsense. And the problem is that we listen to our mind. There's a story that I want to share with you, which is unlike the Satyuk story, this is a real story. So this was spoken by a pastor. It's a real incident that was shared by a pastor in a sermon, and later on it was shared by in one of the seminars that I had attended. So this was Christmas season, and there was a man who was an handyman. Who was in a? So they have these big walk-in coolers where there's in temples we have them, where you store vegetables, fruits, perishables. So he was in the cooler cleaning the cooler, and what he didn't realize was that because it was the Christmas weekend, people were the store was closing early and people were leaving. So somebody closed the lock from the door from outside, and the store. The store was closed. So this man was inside the cooler knowing that for the next 3 days, nobody will be there. So 3 days later on, when they opened the door of the cooler, this man was inside and he was dead. So when they did his autopsy, they found out that he had actually frozen to death. So it's a sad story, but the interesting part of it was that the cooler was not plugged in. So it wasn't actually cooling. But in his mind, this man was so convinced that it actually translated into, so he felt all the symptoms of it being cold, his body reacted to it, he actually froze to death. So that's how powerful our mind is. It's known as psychosomatic, the effect of the mind on the body. So it is the mind that is telling us all these things, that there is pride, there is anger, there is envy, etc. So some of the things that are more common, I mean, there are of course infinite reasons why we don't forgive. But some of the things that are more common than others, the most prevalent is that we have a desire to punish. That when somebody offends us, then we have this desire to get even by punishing him, and we think that if you do not forgive him, that's the hole that we have. So when Drupad, he insulted Dronacharya, then Dronacharya had this strong desire to punish him. And he just did not forgive him. And he shares, when he asked the Pandavas to go and fight, he says that day in and day out, I've been burning in this fire of lamentation because the way he had insulted me. Now of course, while Dronacharya was burning in this fire of lamentation, what was Drupad doing? He was having a good time. So he did his thing, he moved on, and poor Dronacharya, he's the one who was thinking that he was punishing. So actually it's said that, you know, this conception is almost like saying that if you have offended me, so let me drink poison so that you die. It's that mentality. That the person who has offended you, he has moved on. You know, he's moved on to his next victim, so to speak. And what you are doing is that you're holding on. You're holding on to him. You're having him offend you over and over again. So one of the big reasons is that we have this strong desire to punish. The second, more pragmatic reason is that we don't forgive for our own protection. That invariably, whenever there is some offense, there is hurt. And we think that this lack of forgiveness will protect us from future hurt. It was a point that somebody also made. That we don't want to experience that pain again. So we deny the person access to us. So we think that we are protecting. The third is that we are scared of being perceived as weak. Sometimes if a person offends you and you think that, okay, that's fine, and then in your mind you think that, you know, where is my strength, where is my valor, that this person has offended me and I'm just forgiving him like that, I can't let him off like that. So actually there's an interesting discussion between Vidur and Dhritarashtra. Because Dhritarashtra has a big problem with forgiveness. You know, he was not able to forgive almost anybody around him. He was born blind, so he was very upset at destiny. He was the eldest son, but he was denied his kingdom. Very, very upset about it. So Vidur, being an expert, he talks about forgiveness to Dhritarashtra. And he says, there is only one defect in forgiving persons and not other. That effect is that people take a forgiving person to be weak. That defect should not be taken into consideration. For forgiveness is a great power. Forgiveness is a virtue of the weak, and it's an ornament of the strong. Forgiveness subdues all the world. What is there that forgiveness cannot achieve? What can a wicked person do unto him who carries the savor of forgiveness in his hand? So forgiveness actually, contrary to what we may think, it takes a very strong person to forgive. And it's the quality of a weak person not to forgive. The fourth is pride. That when relationships go south, then there is always this aspect of a person's pride being impacted. Whether there is an insult, whether it is explicit or implicit. And because we hold our conception of ourselves very dear to our heart, it's difficult for us to let go of it. And ultimately, it's the sign of kripanam. So kripanam means small-hearted. So I remember once I was traveling on a bus and to the metro station, and then I got off the bus and a person came running after me. And so then he kind of held my hand and stopped me, and he asked me, "What's your problem?" I said, "I'm not sure, I don't think I have a problem." So he said, "No, you seem to have some problem with me." I said, "Yes, I don't even know you." He said, "When you got onto the bus, you stepped on my foot. When you got off the bus, you stepped on my foot. What exactly is your problem?" So he was genuinely upset at me. And of course, it was inconsiderate on my part also, that, you know, maybe I was in a hurry, I stepped over his foot without realizing it. But then I was reflecting on it later on, that he really thought that somebody would want to offend him in this way by waiting to get on the bus when he's there and step on his foot. And, you know, he probably went through that whole thought process. So it's just smallness of heart, that, you know, crippling, that it's difficult to let go of things. So when we do not forgive, then, you know, in effect what we are doing is that we are handing over control of our lives to somebody else. The person who is really speaking least favorable to us, we are saying that, "Prabhuji or Mataji, you are controlling our lives." Brajbhari Prabhu, he was sharing this example with us. So he does what is known as judicial mediation. So he tries to mediate long-running, in India, he does these long-running judicial cases. He tries to mediate them out of court. And one of the court cases that he was talking about was running for 60 years. And it's been carried on by descendants and descendants. And he was saying he was shocked to see not just one person. The whole dynasty was, you know, they were defined by this. And most of the people, they were not even born when the quarrel was, it was a property quarrel. So they were not even born and the property was in contention. They didn't even care about it. But they had spent lakhs and lakhs of rupees and time and energy out of it. So in effect, they just sacrificed their lives to this. And, you know, just to another person. The second thing that we do is that we actually multiply our hurt many times over. So if I come and say something bad to you, then it may hurt you. But if you don't forgive me, then you will relive that incident over and over again. And every time you relive that, you will experience that hurt again. So I may have done my good deed of the day and offended you and then moved on. But as far as you are concerned, you are actually holding on to it. You are actually multiplying it 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times over. So we become attached to our own pain because of not forgiving. We lose out on opportunities. You know, as we discussed, that relationships is all about opportunities to experience happiness. Every time we don't forgive, we fracture a relationship, and that opportunity for happiness is unfulfilled. So this is something that is more contemporary, but something that we know instinctively, that about 26 years ago, there was this Dr. Enright, Robert Enright. He's a famous psychologist. He suspected there was a correlation between physical health and forgiveness. And so he started doing more research on it. And one of the person that he researched was by the name of Marianne Rose. So she was a 51-year-old woman who had so many problems, physical ailments, mental ailments. And when she was a child, she was abused by her father. And when she was 11 years old, her father committed suicide and died. So she grew up in an environment where she had no opportunity to do anything but relive all that abuse that she went to, but nobody to really blame because her father had already died. And he went through this forgiveness therapy, and the results were remarkable, that her health improved, her mental health improved. So then he started postulating this belief that the lack of forgiveness actually impacts our very health. And so it's to us that we can understand it, because everything that is subtle will manifest in a gross form sooner or later. Mahatma Prabhu was once sharing that his personal experience, that when he was preaching in South Africa, he had some misunderstanding with the devotees. He got very upset at them, and he was unable to forgive. And he said he could see his Krishna consciousness go down, his enthusiasm for service. And he said it took him a long time to move out from it. But he said it's factual, that our inability to forgive, it immediately impacts our enthusiasm. So when we forgive, then there are four things that happen. There are many things that happen, but there are four gifts that happen. The first thing is that we get independence from the other person. So every forgiveness is Independence Day for us, because there is one less thing that we are controlled by. So when Dhruva Maharaj, he came back from the forest, he touched the feet of his mother, Surichi, and then he immediately touched the feet of his stepmother, Suniti, and Adhurira. But the matter of fact is that because he was transcendentally situated, he effortlessly forgave his stepmother. And this is the same stepmother that he was so upset about. When she denied him the opportunity to sit on the lap of his father, he became so upset that at a young age of 5, he went to the forest to do all those austerities. But as soon as he forgave, he became completely independent of her. It gives us relief from hurt, the hurt that we keep feeling over and over again. Through the process of forgiveness, we are relieved from it. One of the mystical things about forgiveness, or for that matter, almost anything, is what you give is what you get. So, I don't think in true honesty anybody of us can sit over here and say that we have never offended anybody. So there are people that we also need to get forgiveness from. There are people that we would like to get forgiveness from. And the truth is that when we start forgiving, we will start being forgiven also. In Chaitanya Leela, Jagai Malhai, when they were transformed, so they became very enthusiastic devotees. But they were big rascals before that. They had done a lot of terrible things. So people were still carrying a lot of resentment towards them. And they would look at Jagai Malhai, this guy burned my house a few days ago, or this guy did this. But what did Jagai Malhai do? He went and spoke to Nityananda Prabhu. And he said that, well, you're devotees, so there should not be any reason not to forgive you, but you forgive them for that. There would be people who would be chastising Jagai Madai, and Jagai Madai, all they would do is that they would simply beg for their forgiveness over and over again. And as they practiced this forgiveness, then the hearts of the people changed. And they started receiving that also in bucket loads, actually. Because of this quality that they were doing, is that irrespective of what anybody did, they just simply continuously they forgave the person. So we have to understand that forgiveness is everything to do with us and nothing to do with others. It is nothing to do with the nature of the offense. It is nothing to do with the person who has offended us. It is to set ourselves free. It is to establish ourselves on the path of happiness. And actually speaking, you know, even if you look at it from a more materialistic perspective, what's the best revenge that you can have against a person who has offended you? So the person who has offended you, why does he offend you? Because he wants to see you unhappy. He wants to say something mean to you because he wants to put you down. And you turn around and you're happy. That's the best revenge. That the person has actually failed in trying to do what he wanted to do. So it's Anutma Prabhu in the ISKCON communication seminar that Nityananda Pranath Prabhu was mentioning, he was saying all of us operate by the Vifam principle. So the Vifam is, what's in it for me? We all of us operate by the Vipam principle. So this is what it is for, you know, there are many things in it. So this is one big thing, that this was this person who was trying to, for whatever reason, put us down. But what is it that we do? That we protect ourselves from that through the process of forgiveness. Forgiveness it widens the perspective. It makes us the opposite of kripana. Because when you forgive really, you, as part of forgiveness, is you start seeing things from the other person's perspective. So when we start seeing things from the other person's perspective, then a lot more is revealed to us. So far we are basically holding on to our perspective. That this is the situation that happened, this is what he did, this is what I experienced, therefore he's the offender, I'm offended. But when we start seeing things, that maybe there was some reason why this person behaved in this way. Maybe there is something that I did that I deserve to be corrected or chastised. So it automatically makes us more comprehensive in our perspective. And this is an art that we actually, if we cultivate, it is very valuable in us maintaining our sanity. That the more we are able to see things from the other person's perspective, the more we are able to be in a position to forgive them and move forward. So one thing important to understand is that forgiveness, it does not mean that you don't actually forgive the sin. You forgive the sinner. So it does not mean that you condone an activity. So the person comes and steals in your house, so you may forgive the person, but you don't say that, okay, you know, it's okay to steal. Or you don't say that, maybe next time I'll leave my door open so that he can steal some more. So there's a distinction between the two. That if there is an activity that is reprehensible, then it is important to take actions to protect yourself against it. But the distinction has to be made. Prabhupada was an example of it, that so many times his disciples, he would chastise his disciples. And so if you hear the memories of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, you'll say this, that they will say that Prabhupada chastised us, and they will be scared. Prabhupada is angry with us, upset at us, what's going to happen to us? Next time they would meet Prabhupada, everything, he would be as if nothing had happened. So he did not bear any grudges against the person. The chastisement was only for the activity that the person did. Maybe some service was not done properly, maybe some relationship was not working out properly, and Prabhupada corrected that. But he had a very clear distinction, that this person, I am okay with. I am more than okay with. The activity is separate. One of the things that we see in our house is, empirically we see that kids are generally happier than adults. Why is it that? Very rarely you go in a house and you'll see, you know, kids are like moping and roping and like that, you know. And the reason is that kids have this remarkable quality of forgiveness, that they'll quarrel with one another, and, you know, even, you know, and while the parents are trying to work out the quarrel, the kids are already playing a game. They're forgiven, forgotten, they've moved on. And that's the secret to happiness. That, you know, sometimes, you know, and kids are like kids. My son would sometimes come back from school, and he would say, that boy is so mean, and he's this, and he's that. And, you know, and then evening I look out from the window, he's playing with the same boy. You know, out there. So, can you imagine, you know, if he had decided that I'm not going to play with him, I'm not going to forgive him, you know, pretty soon he would have nobody to play with. So that's, you know, can you imagine if we had that quality in our lives? That, you know, we go through situations that are contentious, and then we forgive and move on. And then we have so many relationships that are open to us. So, last part of what I wanted to speak was a little bit of how to forgive. So we have understood the importance of forgiveness. We've understood how the scriptures glorify forgiveness. We've understood the advantages and the disadvantages. So let's delve a little bit into how to actually forgive. So as devotees and aspiring spiritualists, we are very much in this conception that what we do should be based on conviction. There should be some conviction. You know, the reason that we follow Krishna consciousness, because we have this conviction that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and we need to serve Him. So that conviction then manifests in many, many ways, in many practices, do's and don'ts. But the root of that, of all that practices is that conviction that we have. So one of the strong convictions that if we develop that will help us in forgiveness is this understanding that everything that is happening to us is because of one person only. Who? Okay, so I'm in a mixed room. It's happening because of us. We are the only persons that is responsible for everything that is happening to us. So in the Bhagavatam, there is this pastime of the Avanti Brahman. Some of you may know that. And he was a rich person, but very, very miserly. And then his circumstance changed, he became very poor. And everybody would insult him, and he would be very, very unhappy. People would insult him, throw stones at him. And then one point, he had this epiphany, that why should I be angry at them? Why should I be upset? That actually, the only cause of my suffering is me myself. Is the activities that I've done in this life or in prior lifetimes. So that set him free. So as devotees, so we got two answers, us and Krishna, and they're both right answers. That as devotees we know that everything that is happening to us is either karma or Krishna karma. So this is karma that we generated, or Krishna sending it to us as a token of our previous karma, or he's sending to us for our purification. But either way, the only person in this movie is us. There's nobody else. Maybe Krishna at the top left hand corner, but really speaking, there's only one person there. So if we understand this, then what's the need for us to take offense? So if somebody comes and speaks badly to us, somebody does something mean to us, somebody does something that is ungrateful to us, then it's just, you know, at one point it is just us. We may have done the same thing to somebody else or the same person in the previous lifetime or this lifetime. Or even more glorious is if we think that Krishna has sent this to us. You know, the famous verse in Prabhupada, there's one verse that Prabhupada quotes the most. That's from the 10th canto, 14th chapter, that when one patiently tolerates all the miseries that is coming his way, then for him, I'm paraphrasing the translation, Krishna consciousness becomes his birthright. So Prabhupada says, just like a son, all he has to do is to stay alive, to inherit the property of his father. So one who tolerates all this that is happening, patiently waiting for the mercy of Krishna, then that mercy becomes his birthright. So as spiritualists, if you are able to anchor our interactions in this, that whatever is happening because of us and us only, so then there is not even the need to forgive. Because you look at it this way, that somebody comes and offends you, then you say, one less karma on my tally sheet. So I am one karma less that I have to carry. So, one step closer to Krishna. Or if Krishna is sending it to us and we take it in the proper perspective, same thing. Like Krishna wanted to send us a lesson, we learn that lesson, one step closer to Krishna. So in terms of actual forgiveness, there are a couple of things that, you know, like we said, that we really have to do the forgiveness for ourselves. You know, that's something that should be very strongly anchored in our mind. There was a person who was sharing that they had visited Mother Teresa when she was alive, and in a room she had this chart. And so it's, a lot of you must have seen that it's people will want you to fail, succeed anyway. People will be angry at you, be happy anyway. And then at the end of this, all these things, there's one statement that is there. Why? Because it was never between you and them. It was always between you and God. So that kind of puts things in perspective. That all that we are having, that we are suffering, it is actually really in the context of what is happening with Krishna. Forgiveness should be genuine, very, very important, should be from the heart. I remember when very earlier on, when I had come to the US, fresh from India, so when I was working at a client site, so the person would stop by and say, you know, how are you doing? So then I would stop them and say that, you know, this is what I did. And then I realized that they had no interest in actually knowing what I was doing. They would just say, how are you doing, and move away. And, you know, basically what they were expecting was just saying great or whatever it was. So that's not the kind of thing that would develop a relationship. So similarly, sometimes as devotees, we become, we develop a lot of devotee link, what is it called, devotee jargon. So a person will come and say, please forgive me Prabhu, all said and done. That person is still like, you know, he's such a rascal, that person is thinking that, you know, what's his problem? But you know, it's just taking shelter of the externals. So neither the asking of the forgiveness is genuine, nor the giving is genuine, but it's just the external that happens. It's a little better than not asking for it. But the danger of it is that it becomes an end in itself. That we say, okay, you know, I asked him forgiveness, and you know, so you know, my part of the deed is done, what's the problem? But there is a lack of sincerity in it. So both the asking of forgiveness and the giving of forgiveness should be genuine. If there is an impediment in giving the forgiveness, then it behooves us to work it out. That I would really like to forgive you, but this is what I'm not really sure about. I'm confused. Why did you say this? Why did you do this? And so that kind of a dialogue is important. Because if you take shelter of these externals, then you know the real issue, it just festers. The third thing is that forgiveness should be unconditional. There should be no conditions attached. You should not say, I forgive you because you are a Kanishtha Adhikari, I am a Madhyam Adhikari, so that's why I forgive you. So I know you are a new devotee, you need more help, and you know, so there was once, I'm going to withhold the names for obvious reasons. So there was once a devotee disagreement in the temple, and so, you know, whatever happened. So next day one of the devotees came to the other one and said, I'm sorry about what I said, please forgive. So the other devotee said that, you don't really know who I am, I forgive you. So, you know, I was witnessing it, I'm like, you know, Where is the forgiveness over here? There's just, you know, there is just glorification and condemnation. There's self-glorification and condemnation of the other person. So the important thing in forgiveness is it should be completely unconditional. You know, there should not even be condition like don't do it again. Because that itself is a statement of the fact that what you did was wrong. So it should be you're forgiven. You know, period. That's it. It should be continuous. Forgiveness is not an event. There is this pastime of a sadhu who went into the water because there was a scorpion in the water. And then he took the scorpion out and then the scorpion bit. So he dropped the scorpion. Then he put the scorpion out, he bit him again and then he dropped him again. So after 5 or 6 attempts, the sadhu was able to take the scorpion out and put him on the land. So somebody else was witnessing him and said, "This scorpion, he's been continuously biting you. Why do you keep trying to rescue him?" So the sadhu said, "The scorpion is not giving up its nature. It is the nature of the scorpion to sting. The scorpion is not giving up its nature even though its life is in danger. So why should I give up my nature? My nature is to forgive. So why should I become like the scorpion? Why, you know, if it would have been somewhere else, you know, that scorpion would have been scorpion soup probably. You know, after the second time he would have matched the scorpion and said, you know, here I'm trying to protect you, you're biting me, there it is." So, but the quality of forgiveness, it's not that, okay, first time I forgive you, second time you're in trouble. So it has to be continuous. It has to be over and over again. There are no limits to it. There are no numbers to it. There's no time limit to it. It has to be continuous. And it has to be immediate. So sometimes, you know, we see that there is a disagreement, and then we think that, you know, let this person stew for some time. And then, you know, maybe in a week's time I'll forgive him. By that time, till in that week's time I'll be very cold to him. So let him understand a little bit of the offense that he has done to me, then I'll forgive him. That's not really forgiveness, that's something else. So forgiveness should be immediate. So forgiveness is something that is it is one of those things that is almost mystical in its impact. It is something that gets us closer to Guru and Krishna. I know the only reason that I am able to still practice my Krishna consciousness is because of the innumerable times I have been forgiven by my Guru Maharaj. So over and over again, you know, in times of tribulations, in times of anxieties, you know, he has, even though he may not have said that, "I forgive you," but it is implicit over there. And that is, really speaking, that is my greatest hope, that, you know, one day I may be able to come up to his expectations. So whether it is from a spiritual perspective, from a subtle perspective, there's a doctor in San Diego. He runs a clinic for terminally ill people, and he has treated about 15,000 people, and he has remarkable success rates. About more than 50% of the people who come to his clinic, they live 5 years longer than what the time that was allocated to them. So somebody comes saying that, "I have a month to live," you know, they end up, more than 50% of them end up living 5 years more. And some of them have actually lived 15 years more. And this doctor, the only treatment that he gives is helping these people forgive. He has these sessions, these workshops, these lectures, in which he helps the people forgive, you know. And as you grow older, the list of the people that you're not able to forgive, it grows longer and longer. You know, this guy did this guy did that, this guy did that. You know, and ultimately, you know, we have a lot of problem forgiving Krishna. That Krishna is having fun over there in Goloka Vrindavan, and he sends us over here, you know, to suffer birth, death, disease and old age. So, you know, so we have all that list that we have to tick off. And as we are able to forgive more and more, you know, things, that the product is mystical. Things change for the better. So this is something that, you know, this is something that, that we can make a part of our lives as devotees, to actively and consciously, As devotees, we are already, you know, our hearts are already open, because we are very anxious to change our lives. The reason we have taken to Krishna consciousness is because we understand that business as usual is not good enough for us. So we want to taste something higher. And as we practice this art of forgiveness, as we forgive ourselves, forgive our loved ones and dear ones. You know, ironically, you know, we don't have problem forgiving strangers. You know, we have problem forgiving people that we care about. You know, my car was parked in the metro station, I came back and somebody has scratched it up. And you know, I had no idea who he was. So for a few moments I thought some harsh thoughts about him, but it's gone now. You know, I don't know who he is, whatever it was. But you know, can you imagine if I saw my neighbor scratching my car? It would be a whole different thing. So we have, you know, the closer we are to a person, the bigger the challenge forgiveness is. And that's where we actually have the most opportunity to have loving relationships. So I'll stop now for anybody would like to share anything, any comments? Yes, Mataji? Okay, so the question is that if we forgive the sinner and not the sin, and we associate the both of them, then how we can associate with the person? So a little bit of practical insight into forgiveness. So forgiveness does not mean that we make ourselves vulnerable to activities that are detrimental. So if there's a person who, for whatever reason, has bad habits, so as our own protection, it's important for us to dissociate ourselves. So we have a friend who comes to our house and steals from our house. So it's okay, you know, you forgive the person, but you don't invite the person again to your house. Because one thing is that you're giving the person opportunity to steal, which is not good for him. And you're also encouraging that cycle of sin again. So forgiveness does not mean that you embrace the person and, you know, say he's your best buddy after that. It just means that you are freeing yourself of all the anger, all the disappointment that you experience because of that interaction. Is that okay?
Okay, the question is that, as you said, forgiveness is more for the people who are near you, dear to you.
Yes.
And if you start ignoring those people, they have committed some sin and you've forgiven them, but you are disassociating with them. It's not, to me, it seems like that you're actually ignoring that.
Yes, yes. That's a good point. So, a lot of it is, of course, because this is life in practice. So, life in practice gives us all kinds of situations. You know, there's this pastime of Narad Muni. He preached to a snake, and the snake was a very venomous snake. It would go around biting people, and Narad Muni said, "Don't bite, bad thing." So, the snake said, "Okay." So, after some time, Narad Muni came, and he saw the snake badly beaten up. It was almost dying. He said, what's going on? And snake said, "You told me, you know, no more biting." So I became very docile. So the kids, they came and throw stones at me. If people come and hit me with sticks, what to do? Narad Muni said that, you know, show your fangs. You know, don't bite, but show your fangs. So very practical lesson for us. See, one of the most important tricks in making a spiritual advancement or any kind of advancement is to act according to your adhikar. So if you are a person who is truly not impacted by a person coming to steal from your house. There's a pastime of Ramanacharya that, you know, his disciples, the Ramanacharya sent his disciples, just to make a point, to steal the ornaments of one of his disciples' wives while the ornaments were on her. So she was sleeping, and the disciples came and they were stealing the ornaments of her body. And the husband came and said, "What happened? Half of your ornaments are gone, half are there." Because she was sleeping on one side. So she said, "You know, Ramanacharya looks like he is in a lot of trouble financially. His disciples came and they were stealing ornaments right off my body." So then he said, "Why only half?" He said, "Well, they were sleeping on, you know, I was sleeping on one side, so they could only take half of my ornaments." So the husband chastised the wife. He said, "You should have turned over to allow them to steal the ornaments from the other side." So he was at that level where he really believed that, you know, that even if they're stealing, you know, more, steal more. You know, he was at that level, and he was acting at that level. You know, a lot of us are not. You know, somebody comes and steals at our house, you know, we may be a little concerned about it. But, you know, what we can do is what we have adhikar to. We can forgive the person, we can protect ourselves from the future incidents, and then, you know, like I said, the actual instantiation would be different, but the principle would be the same, and then protect ourselves as much as possible from future occurrences. Yes, Prabhu. Very good question. So the question is that, you know, we have this seemingly catch-22 situation where in order to forgive, we need to have a strong spiritual conception. But one of the impediments to developing a strong spiritual conception is our inability to forgive. So how do we break this? So in a similar vein, it's discussed by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in Madhuri Kadambini, that this seemingly logjam is broken by an external factor. And in this case, the external factor is the mercy of a devotee. So when we get the mercy of a devotee, whether it's in terms of instructions, whether it is in terms of more direct mercy, like when we take initiation, then the Guru Maharaj, he takes away all the sins from us. So he puts us in a situation where we are more that is more conducive to practicing Krishna consciousness when we beg for the mercy from the deities. So the mercy is the, you know, the mercy is the is the external factor that comes in and breaks this circle. So case in point is that, you know, we are unable to forgive, so we are unable to make spiritual advancement, and that's why we are unable to forgive. But for what, but somehow or the else, if you are able to attract the mercy of a devotee, that would help us to forgive. And because of that forgiveness, we are able to make more spiritual advancements, which would then make us more liable to forgive, which will also attract the mercy of the devotee more. So that's how this. So that's how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in Madhurika Dhamini. Is that okay?
Like your class, for example.
Yeah, like this opportunity to discuss. Yeah.
Like, yeah, this is a practical example I give you. Where there's a logjam, and in the mercy of the devotee.
Right.
So the topic that we are hearing, forgiveness, is very relevant for us.
Right.
So
right.
In my case, I feel when you are the person who is bringing the mercy.
Right. Any other comments, questions? Yes, Prabhu. So the question is that while we may forgive the person unconditionally, should we also try to make the person aware of the nature of the offense? And the answer is, and this is an answer that Guru Maharaj gives very often, is that if you think that it will help the person. So if you are able to do it in the mood of service to the person, then yes, of course, you should do it. But if the person is already averse to you, it's like preaching, right? Somebody comes and offends you by offending, you know, saying, you know, sometimes it happens at work, sometimes it happens in family, you know, they'll make fun of your spirituality or Krishna consciousness. If the person is genuinely confused about it, there's an opportunity to clarify. If the person is deliberately doing it, and then you try to clarify, what will happen? He'll make more fun, more ridicule. He'll do more offenses. So whatever opportunity that he had to make spiritual advancement, even that is gone now. So it depends on the relationship that you have. It depends on the person. If he's open and conducive, yes, you should by all means do. If not, then just keep your distance. Okay? Yes, Prabhu.
I have a confusion regarding the act of forgiveness. Is forgetting an offense the same as forgiving a person for an offense?
Okay. So the question is that, is forgiving and forgetting the same thing? And the answer is, of course, no. So forgiveness does not mean amnesia. It does not mean that, you know, I have no idea what the person did to me. You know, forgiveness is a very conscious, deliberate act. You know, it may become intrinsic to us. That, you know, we immediately forgive as soon as it happens. But when we cultivate it, it's a very deliberate quality that we cultivate. And forgiveness is not, you know, the reason forgetfulness at some time is glorified is when it is used in the conjunction of not forgiving. That if a person is not able to forget, and that is associated with not forgiving. Every time I think about it, I get angry. Which means that he has not been able to forgive. But if you have forgiven the person, what does it matter? You may think about it 20 times, 100 times, and you won't even think about it really. But even if you think, what difference does it make? So they become two separate things. Yeah? Yes, Prabhu?
In a devotee relationship, when we try to cultivate the mood of being a servant, generally forgiveness to me sounds like at a higher pedestal, and the person who's been forgiven is at fault.
Mm.
So while cultivating servant mood, how does one apply this principle?
Mm. Very good question. So the question is that when we are devotees, then we are developing this mood of being dasanudas, that we are the servant of the servant. And when we forgive, then we have the sense that I'm higher than the other person. And it again goes back to us developing the right conception in forgiveness. So it goes back to that, who are you actually? What is forgiveness about? It's not about you. It's about the activity that you have done. And ultimately, it's not even about that. It's all about me. You know? So this is one place where the I, me, mine is a good thing. So, you know, that, you know, it's my problem. You know, it's not really yours. Because otherwise it becomes the same thing, like I was sharing with you. That, don't you know who I am? Okay, I've forgiven you. You know? So I'm this big, you know, advanced person, and you are this small, insignificant, so that's why I'm able to forgive you. So that's not forgiveness, you know. That's the opposite of it, actually. It's true. How are we doing with time? Does anybody have a time? Okay, so we have 10 more minutes, 15 more minutes. Okay.
I'm just wondering whether it is possible to, for the forgiveness to be illusory, like in the sense you may feel that you're forgiven, and then after a few years it may recur, and then one feeling like you're not forgiven.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we really know that, yes, it's been done?
So the question is that can forgiveness sometimes be illusory or temporary? That we may think that we have forgiven a person, and then after some time there may be an incident or something, or otherwise, may we realize that we still harbor resentment over there. So again, this goes back to our own commitment to the activity, our own sincerity to it. So, I had attended this seminar on forgiveness, which was a full-day seminar, in which there were several experiential things that you can actually do to kind of, and the point that you're making is very valid, because many times we think we have forgiven, but then we realize we have not. And we can do several things to check on ourselves to see. One of the things that we can do is a role play. So let's assume that you have a problem with me. You're not able to forgive me. So you go to Jagannanda Prabhu and you say that, can you hear of my problem? And so Jagannanda Prabhu becomes me then. And then you can work it out with him. So it happens in two stages. So one is that you express your hurt to him. And the second is that, based on what he has heard, he gives you what he thinks is my perspective, even though he may not know me or the situation, but he gives you. And I was really, really, you know, it sounds academic, but I was really surprised that when we did that exercise, at least in my case, the couple of incidents that I heard the other person when he started speaking, you know, I could see that, yes, you know, it's just that when we are in an incident, we are like a frog in a well. We just see our perspective, that's it. And, you know, and it keeps growing on us over and over again till it becomes the absolute truth. So, yes, it's, you know, that's what happens. But sometimes it just takes another person that you trust to tell you that maybe there's something else going on. So then it reaches into the roots and pulls it out. Yes, please. Say that again, Prabhu. How to do self?
How to do self-forgiveness.
Self-forgiving yourself. Yeah, yeah.
The second question to that part is, like, we forgive consciously. How to forgive in subconscious level? Because sometimes it is hard that you forgive. It's related to Prabhu's question.
Yes, Prabhu.
Hard that you forget, but internally something does, something still is.
Yes.
Yes.
So the question is, first part of the question is, that how to forgive yourself. And the second is that how to reach a state where forgiveness becomes continuous. So, you know, as they say, that charity begins at home. And forgiveness begins with the self. So the point that you brought up is actually very, very relevant in the practical process of forgiveness. That the first person that we need to forgive is actually ourselves. And again, so this is experiential. You know, we can write a letter to ourselves. You know, we can write a diary, in which we say that this is what are the things that we are, that we are holding ourselves accountable for, and that we want to move on. So the flip side, of course, is that, you know, you should not go overboard forgiving yourself also. So, you know, you should not, you know, you, you know, So it's like, you know, I don't chant 16 rounds today, I forgive myself. I beat up that person, I forgive myself. No problem. So, you know, so it has to be done. The focus of everything is the sense of sincerity. That, really speaking, we are, you know, there are so many things that we blame ourselves from the core of our heart. You know, if we look deep in our heart, so many things that we blame ourselves. I remember my son was small, and he had his hand in the hinge of the door. He had his hand there, and I didn't see it, and I closed the door. His hand got, you know, fortunately Prematrangni was there at the time, so she was able to do something. So, but for such a long time, it was very difficult. You know, just, I used to think of him, his screaming and blood and all that. Very, very difficult. Even though it was, I mean, obviously there was no reason I would do it. It was completely an accident. And then at some point I realized that, you know, he was, I don't know what, he was maybe 3 years old. You know, he didn't have anything against me. The only person who had something against me was myself. And I had done it completely accidentally. So then I realized that I should not hold myself. What I should do is be careful about it. You know, in future, you know, be careful about it. But just going through the process of rationalizing, you know, it helps. And the second question about continuous is, this is a question that is often asked to Guru Maharaj, that how does something become more intrinsic as opposed to something that you have to do? And his answer typically is practice. That you should do it over and over, again and again, till the time that it just becomes intrinsic to you. That when you start to learn to drive a bike, you know, you have to think about everything. The balance, the pedal, this, that. But as you practice, all you do is that, you don't even realize that. All that is happening automatically. All you are doing is driving. And what's the difference between the first and the second stage? Practice. So the practice should be, you know, so it should not be done. It should not be done on. There's a person who I was speaking to. So we were talking about vegetarianism. So he says, you know, I'm a vegetarian every Thursday. So I said, you know, what about the other 6 days? Why do you have to pick only one day to be a vegetarian? So I mean, of course, one day is better than no day. But you know, why stop at one day? You know. So similarly, when we are onto something good, then, you know, why stop? Just do it over and over again. Is it okay? Thank you. Yes, Prabhu. Right. So the question is that there is misunderstanding between two people, and both of them are forgiving each other without addressing the real situation. So, you know, what happens to the real situation? So there are two different things. You know, forgiveness does not mean that there is no, the question was also asked earlier here, the forgiveness does not mean that the issue does not get resolved. Forgiveness does not mean that protective action is not taken. The forgiveness does not mean that there is no communication. You know, so forgiveness does not mean that everything that you give me, I'll take, and, you know, give me some more. That's not forgiveness. So forgiveness stands independent on its own. And after you forgive, the dialogue actually becomes more fruitful. Because then there is a sense of objectivity in the discussion. Because if you have the discussion without forgiveness, then there's a lot of vested emotions. That, you know, you said this. I was, a few months ago, I was attending, this was in conflict resolution. So the ex-president of Ecuador was speaking there. So he was talking about the conflict between him and his neighboring country, I think, I forget, Paragua or whatever. So they were having this border dispute. And the president of this country was a very, very egoistical, strong-minded person. And this person was a newly elected president. So he went, you know, he went over there, and he said, the first thing that I did was, so the outcome of the negotiation was that, you know, this border dispute that was going on for actually more than 50 years, and it, three wars and all that, so it was amicably resolved, which nobody had any hopes for it happening. But he said the real thing was that, you know, when I came in, I put the incident aside. And you know, he said, I just went and related to him person to person. And he was a good person. The other guy, Imori, he was saying, Michel Imori, he was a good person. So he said, once that connection was established, then, you know, we approached the problem together. That, so he said, we actually physically took this perspective. So he said, we started off at the opposite ends of the table. And then he said, I went up and I sat down next to him. And I said, let's look at the maps. Let's look at the this and all that. So initially the person was saying, this, you guys do this, we guys do this. And he said, when he sat next to him, then he started speaking that, you know, maybe we should do this, maybe the pronouns changed after that. So actually, you know, when you forgive, then the opportunity to resolve an issue, it increases dramatically. But it does not mean that you don't resolve the issue. If the issue needs resolution, then by all means do it. And forgiveness does not mean that, you know, you brush the issue under the carpet. So, it's true.
Thank you for asking us how to forgive. My question is that how to get forgiveness? Is it, first of all, is it okay to expect forgiveness from others? What if somebody does not forgive me because of my mistakes? Should I see that person suffer because that person is not forgiving?
Right. So the question is that so far we have been speaking about how to give forgiveness, but then how to ask for forgiveness, that what's the right way. So we briefly spoke about it, that you know, one thing we should not do is to ask for it superficially, that we go to the person and say, please forgive me, and then move on. So there are two things that are very important when we are asking for forgiveness. One is acknowledgement that there is some hurt that has been given by me to you, and the second is a promise that it will not happen again. So these are two very important ingredients. So it will not happen again to the best of my ability, because we are all fallible. May or may not happen again, but it's not that we ask forgiveness, you know, in our mind we are saying, you know, till the next time. You know, we should not go with that mentality. So I remember that you know, once a devotee had come to the temple, and he had done a very nice presentation on science of self-realization. And so I went to him and I said, Prabhu, can you share your presentation, the PowerPoint, can you share it with me? He said, yes, of course. And then, you know, and he did not. So then I went again after a few days and I said, can you share it with me? He said, absolutely. You know, and I'm very sorry I didn't give it to you. I wish it, he did not. And then after 2 days I went again. I said, of course, I'm really sorry I didn't give it to you, but I'll give it to you. And he did not. So, you know, it made me feel really bad. That, you know, in a way, every time I would go to him, he would ask for forgiveness. I'm really sorry, I have these reasons. But there was no rectification at their end. So it just makes the whole thing very superficial. So if we are genuine in our asking for forgiveness, then the first thing is we should acknowledge what has happened. It does not mean that you take the blame. It does not mean that, you know, I am in wrong, you are in right. But there is an acknowledgement that because of me, there has been some misunderstanding or pain at your end. And the second thing is this promise, that to the best of my ability, it won't happen again. That means that you are genuine in your asking for forgiveness. So please forgive me for speaking so long. I have so I would like to share with you that this has been one of the most enlightening experiences for me, just hearing such wonderful devotees think about this thing. And obviously all of you have thought about it, you know, you're all people who are aspiring for the transcendental, so you're very much in tune with it. So this is actually the third time I'm giving it, and I really enjoyed this especially. And you know, thank you for tolerating me. I know it's condensing a lot in relatively little time, so thank you for bearing with me. I have a announcement to make, so please don't kill the messenger. Lunch will be served half an hour late. So it will be served at 1:30 p.m. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.